The Picture Show.
Is this where I'm going to be a star?
On News Talk.
Mike, is it true that you believed for a long time that you couldn't make a period film?
No, it's not that I believed I couldn't. It's just I never thought I would because it never occurred to me that I might. I was committed to making contemporary films with contemporary settings. And I think I've mentioned that, and this is why you mention it, because I sort of knew about the Peterloo Massacre eventually, not having known about it whilst growing up in Manchester, weirdly enough. And I remember reading a book about it somewhere along the line, perhaps in the 70s, I can't exactly remember, and thinking it would be great if somebody made a film about this. But I never thought that somebody would be me because, as I say, as we're talking about, it hadn't occurred to me that a period film would be something that I would do. But it wasn't that I didn't think I could, it's just it never occurred to me that I might.
Yeah, yeah. So, and just to explain a little bit about the background to it, about how you eventually came to do it.
Well, it just only about 5 years ago, after we'd made Mr. Turner, did it suddenly hit me, for some reason, that it might be a good idea. And not least because I had an instinct that there was something relevant about it. And also the bicentenary of the event is next year in 2019. We decided to do it, and once we started preparing it, started researching it, it occurred to us almost on a daily basis. We kept realising that it really is relevant.
By the way, do you get really deeply involved in the research when you get into something like this?
Totally. Well, what else could I do? I mean, it's the only way to do it, really.
Yeah. Okay, there's one. There's loads of fascinating things about the film, and actually what I've read about it, and one of the fascinating aspects is the way 200 extras and this is what I read anyway in Empire magazine, 200 extras and CG crowd replications were used to swell the crowd.
Yes, I mean crowd replication is quite a standard procedure with modern films. I mean, there's all kinds of wonderful tricks you can play with so-called CGI, digital technology. I mean, obviously there were, it would seem, 80 to 100,000 people at Peterloo back in August 1819. Well, we couldn't afford that number of extras.
Yeah.
We had 200, which was actually pushing it. I mean, you do see movies which have bad crowd replication, and you think, how come that guy is here and there and here and there all at the same time? But it was done very well and very, very proficiently.
I remember maybe the first case of that I saw anyway was Ridley Scott's Gladiator, and that didn't do it so well, I think.
Yeah, well, that's not for me to comment on, really.
Yeah. This film is released through Amazon. Does this mean that you have a future relationship with them? Are you going to be...
That's a question with no answer. I would... It wasn't so much that it's being released through them, that they backed it. Amazon Studios backed the film, and I have to say they were immaculate in the way they treated us. They never interfered with it at all. They were totally supportive, and they of course gave us far more money than we would otherwise than I've ever had for any of my previous films. As to any question of a future relationship with them, that sort of depends on them and how they progress and all of those things, and I wouldn't like to comment on that.
Yeah, that's okay. Now I've been sort of researching this for the last few days, and you've been quoted in one interview, I think it was at the Venice Film Festival, saying that you can't be a filmmaker unless it's in your bloodstream. Could you expand on that? Can you expand?
Well, of course, when you get quoted on saying things that you've said previously, particularly in the context of the likes of the Venice Film Festival, I'm quite sure that that came out of the context of somebody saying something else.
Yeah.
I seem to think vaguely that I was talking about, being asked some sort of question about how you know what it is that you're looking at, or how you know how to decide on decisions. Look, I mean, I don't want to be grand about it, or
Be grand if you want.
Well, I don't want to be grand, although it's very kind of you to give me a license to do so. I see no reason to go in that direction. Look, painters can paint. Mm. If you can draw, you can draw. You know, musicians are musical, and poets have, you know, the power of words, et cetera, et cetera. And filmmaking is, you know, we filmmakers are artists in our own right. And I think, you know, a sense of what film is and a sense of that, the need to, you have to have that impulse to capture the world and its rhythms and its details and its texture and people and places and all those things and do something with them. And that's what filmmaking is. And in that sense, you know, you kind of have to have it in your, somewhere along the line in your system.
On that point, have you generally enjoyed making the films that you've made, just generally speaking?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. It's a blast. No, I mean, actually, it's very interesting you should ask that question, given what I've just said about other artists. Mm. Because apart from anything else, I mean, painters do work on their, by themselves in their studios, mm. and novelists sit alone and write their novels, and so do poets and potters. And we filmmakers, it's a very collaborative mm. and it's a communal activity. Mm. And therefore, you really, you know, it is enjoyable. The crack is great.
So I read somewhere, by the way, that Maxine Peake wrote to you. I think she's a wonderful actress.
She is a great actress. You know, and the thing about this story is it's no big deal. I mean, she picked up that I was doing the film. She dropped me a note saying, can I be in it? And I phoned her up and said, yes. And frankly, it was a no-brainer, because if you're going to make a film about the Peterloo Massacre, which is a great working-class story set in the Manchester area, then not to have Maxine Peake in it, apart from her regional credentials, I mean, she's a political actress. Yeah. And not only that, but she actually participates every year in the memorials in Manchester on the Peterloo Day. So, I mean, it was a no-brainer, really, I think. There was no question of it.
Yeah. When did you discover, by the way, that you were becoming an actual working film director?
When?
Why, yeah. What stage of your life?
Well, you mean at what point did I notice that I was making films?
No. I remember the Wednesday play and stuff like that.
yes. I mean, the Wednesday play slightly precedes my contribution. Look, it's hard to know how to answer your question. If I answer the question, how did I know I wanted to be a filmmaker?
Okay, that'll do.
That was a very, very early thing.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I used to sit in at the pictures as a kid in Manchester, watching nothing but British and Hollywood films, by the way, no foreign movies. Mm. Never got to see those till I went to London at the age of 17. But I used to sit in the cinema thinking, wouldn't it be great if you could have a film where the characters in it were like real people? Because I kind of thought, well, they're not really, you know. And the whole thing, I wanted to capture the world. That's what I referred to a few moments ago. It was, you know, I always kind of knew that's what I wanted to do in some way. And to make theatre and make, you know, entertain people and do all that stuff. And so as soon as possible, I got to do things that would give me the experience. Mm. And that's what I was doing when I left home. Mm.
So you were about, what, 17 or 18 then, were you?
Yeah, 17, yeah. I went and trained as an actor at RADA in London. I went to soon after I did that, I acted in a couple of films and on television. You can find me on YouTube.
Yeah, playing I have found you.
Have you found me playing a deaf mute boy in the Meg Ray episode? It's, you know, if you want a really good example of why some people shouldn't be actors, look at my performance in that. It's truly shocking. And I think I'm much better behind the camera, really.
And I think you're a bit hard on yourself.
Thank you very much. Okay. You obviously have no taste.
Now, many of your films have been described as cult classics, but perhaps none more so than Naked. And David Chulis was amazing, I think, in it. And could you say what, you know, this was such a dark character. Can you say at all what you were trying to get out of him, what you were trying to say through him?
Well, there's a lot of things to talk about there. I mean, look, when the film came out, a lot of people said this character, and therefore this film, but particularly the character, is a cynic. And I vehemently reject that, because the whole point about the film is, far from being a cynic, he's an idealist, but he's a disappointed, frustrated idealist. He's actually disappointed in the state of the world, of the materialism and cynicism of the world. Mm. And that's made him become aggressive and turn in on himself. But in fact, if you really look at him, you can see that he has compassion and imagination and wit. And of course, the film isn't just about Johnny, the character. It's about that world and an evocation of something that is dark but real, you know. So that's really what the film is about. It's also about, there are other things that were behind the film. I wanted to do a film about unacceptable male behaviour. And the reason for the character,
that, isn't it?
Well, there's that, there's him. But the reason for the landlord, who is an infinitely more despicable kind of character, was just to put Johnny's behaviour in some kind of perspective. Also, I had started to think, well, we made the film in 1992. And the millennium was lurking somewhere down there on the horizon. And I started to think about the millennium. And so there are some millennial themes woven into the films and preoccupations.
I just, on this, I read an interview with a man called Laurie Taylor.
Yes.
Who, he suggests in the interview that he went to RADO with you. Is that right?
No, he didn't. He went to a drama school.
Oh, did he?
But I don't think he went to RADO, and he certainly wasn't there with me.
Yeah. But anyway, in this interview, he said that there wasn't a single, he was saying anyway, that there wasn't a single bad character. He was making the point that your films were non-judgmental. And he was saying that there wasn't a single bad character in them. And you answered, except with one exception. And the exception was the landlord in Naked.
Absolutely. But then again, you see, even that, you have to sort of stop and pause, because, you know, if that guy was like he is, there's a reason for it. Yeah. I mean, you know, you could very quickly, without being particularly Freudian about it, you could quickly come to the conclusion that he wasn't nurtured in a very loving homestead as a kid, you know.
But I have to say, I love the way he asked you for this bad character, this bad man, and I just love the way you actually came back with this single individual.
But he didn't even ask me. He stated there weren't any, in fact, as a matter of fact.
Did Secrets and Lies change your career? I mean, there were awards all over the place and Golden Globes. And
Yes, it did. It certainly made it possible. Well, actually, I think it'd be true to say that it actually made it possible to make Topsy Turvy, where we got a much bigger budget than any that we'd previously had. And Secrets and Lies certainly helped in that department.
And by the way, the Topsy Turvy would have been one of the, is it three period films you've made?
Well, it's three, you could say it's four or five, because Vera Drake is set in 1950.
Yeah.
And Career Girls is set in 1996, but flashes back to 1986. So there's a bit of period in that. But in the pure sense, Topsy Turvy, Mr. Turner and Peterloo are the obvious three that you're talking about.
Yeah. Now, Vera Drake is, well, it's about abortion. Abortion runs through it. And I don't know if you know it or not, but abortion was a big issue in this country for a long time.
I know exactly all about it, and I know what's happened recently.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, and it's still an issue in the north, in the north of Ireland.
I know all about it.
Yeah, how do you feel about it? Have you got a view on it?
Well, of course I got a view about it. I mean, obviously, Vera Drake was very much a film. Look, Vera Drake is about an illegal abortionist, and I made the film having been, I'm old enough, having been born in 1943, to remember what it was like when people had unwanted pregnancies and illegal abortionists were involved. Mm. And I had the idea of making that film for actually about 40 years before we actually
40
did
years?
It. Yeah. And, I totally am pro-choice, and I think the whole nonsense of outlawing abortion is ridiculous and disgusting, frankly. So, those are my views about it. Mm. And I think what's happened in this country recently is very good news.
Mm. Yeah. Do you get tired of being asked questions about your improvisation?
No, I don't. It's a perfectly legitimate thing for people to want to know about it, because it's interesting, I know, for people. I prefer to talk about what films are about and all of those things. Mm. But, you know, I'm very happy to explain, if people want to know, how we go about it. I mean, the real truth is, and everybody that I've worked with agrees with this, is that we can talk about it and affect to describe it apparently at great length till we're blue in the face, but nobody really knows what we actually get up to, because it's kind of a bit esoteric and it involves a certain amount of alchemy.
Hmm. Now, you made a film, I think this was in the 70s, called Mean Time, which is one of your first features. It was a feature for television, I think, was it?
Yeah, it was made in 1983, actually.
Right.
It was a feature for television. It was one of the early Channel 4 films. Mm. It was a film that was motivated by my very strong feelings about Thatcher and unemployment. And it is a film about unemployment. It's actually one of the films I've made that I'm most proud of, really.
Oh, is it?
I still have a great soft spot for it, yes.
And what happened to it then? Did it disappear?
I mean, no, it's around. It's in fact, it's in the Criterion collection.
Oh.
Currently, no. I mean, it did disappear for a while. And in that period, I used to get letters from people saying, you know, because there were sort of illicit underground tapes of it kicking around. And I'd get letters saying, you know, I'm unemployed and I've seen Mean Time, and it really, I found it really inspiring and gave me hope and so on. But no, it's very much had a revival, and it's out there, and it is, as I say, in that very excellent collection.
Criterion collection.
Called Criterion.
Yeah. Well, it's a great pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, and you too, and thank you.
And thank you for coming in.
No, thank you.